Welcome to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning. This is Leslie Dorries. There's an old song that starts out, love and marriage goes together like a horse and carriage. And that brings up this romantic idea of, you know, a nice horse-drawn carriage ride maybe through Central Park. But it also throws back to maybe this idea that marriage is as obsolete as getting around in a horse and buggy. And even Sarah Silverman came out with marriage is actually barbaric. But we're all around right now with all this talk about marriage. There's the push for gay marriage. There's arguments about what traditional marriage is and whether monogamy is something that people can actually do. And then on the other hand, we have a $52 billion wedding industry going on. There's an increase in cohabitation with children to parents who aren't married. We get contradictory statistics, basically whatever position you have, you can find a statistic to support it. The latest one being that millennials have concerns about marriage and that 30% of millennials probably will not be married by age 40. There's conversation about waiting to be married until you're financially ready, but marriage itself is a way to generate wealth, and it's also a shield against poverty. Not to mention that there's a benefit to children who are in a solid, consistent two-parent household, which they can have without being married. It's enough to make your head spin. So today on the show joining me are the authors of a new book called The New I Do, and we have Susan Peace Gaudois, who is an author and a therapist and the creator of the Phoenix Model of Divorce Recovery, and Vicki Larson, who's a longtime journalist, the lifestyles editor at a San Francisco area newspaper. She's a Huffington Post contributor, and she's the creator of the blog OMG Chronicles. So, ladies, welcome. Thank you for joining me. I want to talk about your new book and your new perspective. And so let's just start the conversation about why did you guys write this book?
Well, I will start. This is Susan, and about 12 years ago, it occurred to me after working with the divorcing population for a couple of years and also not being married myself that my feeling about the marriage model is that it's extremely shame-based. And the reason I say that is people would come in and tell me that they had a failed marriage, even if the reason that they wanted to go their separate ways was a good reason, meaning each person had grown and gotten healthier. They just really saw themselves as having failed, and they were really afraid of judgment from others about being failed, having failed. And my own personal perspective was that I was not yet married, and I was asked constantly, what's wrong with you? How come you're not married? And so it really occurred to me that anyone who's not in that model of, you know, the heterosexual marriage, 2.5 kids, there's something wrong. And I had this idea back in 2002, but the world wasn't really ready, not to mention that I needed Vicki very much to be in on this project because she added so much. I sent out letter after letter and got rejection after rejection to publishers and agents, mm-hmm. and finally things came together at a time when I believe that the world can handle this concept of let's question tradition and let's get away from a shame-based model so that more people mm-hmm. feel that it's appropriate.
I love your perspective that, you know, there really does seem to be this sense of if you aren't married, or coupled up or something, there's something wrong with you. And from my viewpoint, I would rather people be with the right person than just be with somebody because that's what society says you're supposed to do.
Right.
Yeah. That's really true, Leslie.
I'm sorry, Vicki.
That's okay. I just wanted to thank you, Leslie, for having us on the show. And I agree with you. And Bella DiPaolo, a sociologist at the University of at Santa Barbara, has coined it matrimania, this intense kind of thing in society to couple up and marry. And that puts a lot of pressure on people that we internalize that something's mm-hmm. wrong if we don't get married by a certain age, or that we're not coupled, and it really restricts us, and it makes us sometimes make bad choices because we're feeling, oh my gosh, this should be happening by now, we'd like to see that end.
Well, and you're talking about that, and my mother was just here, and you know, she's a widow, and even now at her age, she feels like sometimes she's the fifth wheel when she's hanging out with her friends who are still married and alive. And, you know, she says, it still feels really weird. And, you know, she's almost 80 years old. It's like, when does this ever stop?
I don't know. That I have a saying that the world doesn't need more married people. The world needs more authentic, happy people.
Ah, yes, and that's, again, as a therapist, I see this. It's like, well, where I live in North Carolina, and I'm going to get in real trouble if anybody hears this, but we have a women's college, and the idea was that in your junior year, you got your class ring, and in your senior year, you got your diamond ring. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, regardless
oh my
of who, you know, it's like, it just gives me the heebie-jeebies. You know? It's like, no, don't do that.
And going to college for your MRS degree,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and, you know, even what Susan Patton, the Princeton mom, who kind of created a bit of a fury about a year or so ago and then came out with a book, which reignited the fury again about, you know, hey, meet your spouse in college, which is not the message that a lot of young women nowadays want to hear.
Well, and especially because, I mean, I think of myself when I was 19 and in college, and I have told more people than I can say that I'm so glad that neither one of my college boyfriends proposed to me, because it would have been a disaster.
Yeah, well, you know, I had one of those marriages. I didn't meet him in college, but I married a few months before my 21st birthday, and because we were in love. And that's pretty much it. So that marriage didn't last very long, and we both went on to have, you know, happy second marriages. His is still intact, mine is not, but still, you know, when you're that young, you need to think a little bit more about what you want and what kind of marriage you want to have and what is the purpose of getting married, because nowadays, you really don't have to get married anymore. You can have children outside of marriage. You can have sex outside of marriage. You can live with somebody outside of marriage. Women can have financial independence outside of marriage. So a lot of the things that, you know, my mother didn't have and a lot of boomers' parents didn't have was the choices. And we have choices now. And marriage, for the first time really in history, has competition. So now it's really wise if young people say, well, why do I want to get married? What would be the purpose of that marriage?
And I love that because it's about being intentional. And I get a little annoyed, maybe too strong of a word, or maybe it's just not the right word, but I guess discouraged and dismayed when it becomes all about the wedding and the party and the three wedding dresses and the, you know, over the top and all of this, and it's really, I mean, it's like, if you want a party, go throw yourself a party. That's great. Just have a wonderful party. Dress up, whatever. But it sort of makes it not about what you're actually doing, especially the younger you are.
They both, Vicki and I, write for the Huffington Post, and a while ago they came out with the divorce page. Then they came out with the wedding page. They don't have a marriage page.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Addressing.
No, well, and they also, I think they have a parenting page.
That's great. But there's also a marriage page that needs to happen, I think.
Yeah. Oh, and if you have any pull with them, can you keep that? Because I mean that's my thing. It's like, I don't think everybody should be married. I mean, I think it's a personal choice. But if you're going to be married, figure out what you want it to look like, which I think is what you're doing in your book. I'm sitting here looking at this flow chart, And I would love you guys to explain a little bit about this flow chart that Vicki had on one of her blog posts, right? I think it's as soon as the book was published. And it's a really interesting flow chart about marriage options, which people generally, it's like, what do you mean marriage options? Don't you just get married?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'll let Susan explain the flow chart, but I will just start with a little bit addressing exactly what you said. A marriage license doesn't do anything for you other than make you privy to the, I think, 1,100 government benefits that you get. That's what the marriage license does. It doesn't tell you that you have to live together. It doesn't tell you that you have to be monogamous. It doesn't tell you how you live your day to day. That you are free to make up to have the marriage that you want. But we don't realize that we actually have options, and that my reason for getting married as a middle-aged woman with two grown children is going to be very, very different than a 26-year-old woman who would maybe like to have children, or empty nesters who never wanted children and don't have children and whatever. So it's more about individualizing your marriage by what you determine, what you want to get out of marriage. That was kind of the goal, and I'll let Susan explain a little bit about the flow chart that our publisher, Hill Press, beautifully created for us.
Great, and I do have it in front of me, and one of the things that I think is really important to mention, Leslie, is the fact that when Vicki and I did sit down to write, and we talked about what are the different kinds of marriages, I need to let you know, we didn't know all of these. We didn't necessarily set out to set up these seven models. We had a couple of ideas, but as we started doing research, and we surveyed almost 1,000 people from all over the world, and we did interview several couples. But we really, I mean, we had our eyes open to what's really going on out there. So there are different models. There's a starter marriage, parenting marriage, companionship marriage, safety marriage, living apart together marriage, an open marriage, and a covenant marriage. And then that's in addition to traditional marriage. And I say traditional in quotes as if we all know what we're talking about.
Right.
And this is a very, very simplified version so people can really get a sense of, you know, if you want this, does marriage need to be more flexible? Yes. Well, then you can go down to the other models. If you say no, it shouldn't be more flexible, that might mean you should be in a covenant or a traditional marriage. You know, we're asking questions like, do you really want kids? Yes. Parenting. Do you have common interests? You know, does money matter? Can couples live apart? Is that okay? And can you take on another lover outside marriage? So, and I guess the big question is, can you marry someone besides your soulmate? And that will drive. Those are some really key questions that determine what kind of marriage might be best suited for you.
And I feel a need to point out, because Susan mentioned covenant marriage, which is not a very well known marriage. It is. There are actually two legal marriage licenses in the United States right now. Two, not just one. There is the marriage that most of us marry, and then in four southern states, there is a covenant marriage, which was created about, I don't know, two decades ago, I believe, and it's harder to marry, and it's harder to end the marriage. So it involves separate paperwork in addition to your regular marriage license, and it involves a bunch of steps. And so that is, we found to be a very interesting fact that there actually are two legal licenses in the United States for marriage.
I had heard about covenant marriages. I didn't realize, and I guess now that you mention it, I guess I do realize that that there is a different license for that. And I know that it's on some level it's been a hard sell, even though there are parts of it that I agree with. Because for me, anything that gets people to think more seriously about the marriage versus the wedding is a good thing.
Right.
However that plays out for that couple. And then, you know, right now we have pretty much no contest divorces, I think, all over the country. I don't think, except possibly with a covenant marriage. And, you know, so one person, even though it took two people to decide to get married, it only takes one person to decide to end the marriage. And that, of course, has its own drawbacks. And, you know, and I know that a lot of times anybody says anything about divorce, it's like, oh, well, you want to get people back into these abusive relationships. It's like, no, I don't. But we seem caught up in this black and white. Well, if you think this way, then you automatically have to think that way. And this is one of the things I really love about this flow chart that you guys have put out there, is that there isn't one single way to be married.
Yeah, and I do think that in terms of our societal comfort, we like people to be in boxes, and we like to know their story, even if we really don't, but we like to think we do. And I do think that it's just easier to think in terms of black and white. And we are saying there's a lot of gray, and I know that it's going to make a lot of people upset. It's going to seem blasphemous to, you know, alter the marriage as we know it. And again, we'll just keep saying it, it's already happening. We didn't invent any of this. We didn't create it. We're just naming it, and hopefully we're asking people to be more accepting of the alternatives.
Well, and I think one of the things is you guys are bringing it out into the open, because I remember an interview with Katharine Hepburn, who basically said she didn't want to be married. She just wanted a man to live close and visit often, which I always thought was hysterical. but that's what you guys are talking about, this either this living apart marriage, you know, and it's like, well, what works for the two of you?
That's true. And that's why we think, you know, when people talk about, you know, the institution is unstable and it's weakening, we think that if couples come together with the shared goals of what they want their marriage to look like, we'll actually have much more stable marriages because they're goal-oriented. And so if people want, like Katharine Hepburn, to be in a committed, loving relationship, but also recognize that they need a lot of personal freedom, then this is a model that can actually really work very well. And a lot of people have done it through history. I mean, Frida Kahlo was next door to Diego. A lot, there's so many ways to make that happen. And a lot of people say, well, you know, how do you make that work? It's not loving. Part of it is living together. I'm like, why do you think it's living together? Because your parents did that? Because other people do that? Is that what you want? Maybe you don't really want that. And that's something to consider. And a lot of the research on those marriages shows that they're actually even more committed than people who are living together. So, or at least they feel that way. And you know what? If you feel that way, then of course you act that way. And if you act that way, it just strengthens the partnership.
And I should mention something about time-limited marriages, which is another idea that we pose in the book. And one of the experiences that I've had in talking to dozens and dozens of couples who have come in and talked to me about the minute they were married, they stopped being treated well. And it was almost as if their spouse thought, well, cool, I don't have to try anymore. I'm married, and, you know, she's stuck with me or he's stuck with me. And one of the aspects of a time-limited marriage is you really have to either be on your best behavior or be ready to have your spouse say, I don't want to continue in this relationship. So I feel like that's another way the institution will be strengthened, because you're staying because you really want to stay, not because you have to.
Well, and you're right, because we all, I mean, when I work with my couples, I say, you know, whether or not you realize it, you and your partner and anybody who's married is making a choice every day whether or not they're going to stay married. So they're actually doing this time-limited thing anyway. It's just that the way you're talking about it is that it's out, and it's like, okay, every 2 years or every 5 years or whatever the time frame is, we're going to reevaluate, just like we all get evaluated in our job in our job performance once a year. I'm kind of like, okay, well, how am I doing as a spouse? You know, how are we doing as a couple? I think it's a great idea, but then again, it brings it front and center.
Well, yes, and a lot of people don't want to address that. When we were doing the research on time-limited contracts, which kind of seems like a new radical idea, we were kind of shocked that, like, in ancient Japan, they had a 5-year marital contract. And in the 1800s, it was being talked about. And then, again, in the 1960s with Margaret Mead suggesting that there should be 3 different types of marriages and so on. And then, of course, the big book, Start a Marriage, which came out about a decade or so ago. And then Mexico City a few years ago proposed that, but couples can choose a limited contract. The minimum is 2 years, and everyone thought, and that's a Catholic country, and they were thinking, oh, my God, how horrible that is. But it didn't pass. But what we feel now, that even though it's been talked about throughout history, we really are at such a crossroads now with marriage that it actually is something that we should be talking about, and we're at a place where it actually could happen. Just about a month or so ago, there was an article in Time magazine that millennials were interested in what they called a beta marriage, which I love that term so much sexier than a starter marriage, but they're open to that, and I was very, very encouraged by that. They are more open to thinking about marrying differently, and that's exactly what we're asking people to do, to think about it.
Well, and I agree with you, but there, I do have to say that in the blog post that you put up about the new I Do, you actually talk about not necessarily marrying a soulmate or the love of your life, and in fact, you encourage people not to do that because you say, don't we all know love leads to disappointments, resentments, and frustrations? So I'm like going, okay, and this is part of like, it's like, how do you take love out of this? And I don't really think that's what you guys are necessarily suggesting, because I'm not sure, I'm not sure you can. Although at times you do sort of like, okay, you have somebody said, oh, you're the love of my life, I'm so glad we're married. And then, 10, 15 years later, they're in the therapist's office going, we never loved each other.
We need to define the word love. And that's part of the problem is we don't really, we assume we know what we're all talking about. There's romantic love, there's basic friendship love, there's, and I think it's really crucial that we start identifying the fact that one of the things we're saying is taking romantic love, which is really not on solid ground, out of the equation as the top reason that you should marry someone. Love in terms of respect and kindness and care for the other person is fabulous. And that's what we're saying is just let's get the priorities in a different order.
It's the deeper love, not that infatuation, rip your clothes off,
get all the time people come in and say, well, my spouse said, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And that's
don't you hate that?
And it's like, actually, that's when the mature love starts.
Yes, because they think that that's less than. And, of course, most of the time when somebody says that, that's what they mean, too.
That
the fact that I love you is somehow less than being in love with you. And you and I both know, it's like, this is when it's commitment. This is when you're really willing to put your shoulder to the wheel and work through whatever challenges. But again, that's all based on the idea that you've actually had this conversation beforehand about what you even want this relationship to look like.
Exactly. I think it's people looking for a high of some kind. If I'm not high, then it must be wrong.
And Leslie, we are not saying no love at all. It's just that love has been the expectation now, the number one reason to marry. That's what everybody says, what everybody feels. And they're also, you know, when Pew does its studies, you know, people say companionship, long-term commitment, this and that, financial, all of those are in the top, you know, five. We're saying push those other things up to the top and move. We want to boot love from the number one spot because...
Right, that romantic love.
Romantic
mm-hmm.
Yes,
right.
It isn't
mm-hmm.
enough to sustain a marriage, and it certainly isn't enough to raise children. And
and
that, you know, and I Susan and I both agree that, you know, our parenting marriage is probably going to be the most controversial of all the models that we offer,
mm-hmm.
Because we really are very strongly for not marrying your soulmate or the love of your life or your BFF.
Mm-hmm.
You marry
mm-hmm.
someone who is going to be the best co-parent with you in raising those children, because if you
right.
really want to offer children a stable, conflict-free environment so that they can thrive, and, you know, we bring children into the world in the desire that they're going to do well. We want them
mm-hmm.
to. We want to give the best to them. Then you cannot put love at the top of your list.
Well, and this is where one of those occasions where I'm with you about 95% of the way. And in my viewpoint is, I think, now, not the all-out neurochemically driven, you know, infatuation stage that lasts, 18 months to 3 years when we first meet somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you can still have romantic love as part and parcel. Now, again, I agree with you. It can't be the primary driver, because that ebbs and flows over time.
Mm-hmm.
But you can always, you know, I'm a big proponent of kind of holding on to it, and you can always kind of, you know, fan the embers as opposed to just throwing cold water on them. But I'm a much more unified that I think you can have that. But I agree that it's not sufficient to sustain a relationship for 30, 40, 50 years,
and
or even 10,
some
for that
research
matter.
By a guy named Paul Amato, and there are definitely other people, but that was absolutely shocking as well, and that is that kids actually don't care if their parents are married. They don't care if their parents are in love. All they really need is for each parent to love them. They need a stable, non-hostile environment in which to grow up in order to be the healthiest. So, again, something that happened in the research was we started to come upon some really alternative websites, such as modamily.com, where people actually go on as if it's a dating site to find a co-parent. They don't love each other. Some don't even know each other at all. They don't plan to live with the other. But they want each one a child. They have the common goals. They vet each other out in terms of parenting skills and styles. And they can marry around having a child as the focus, the main purpose of
mm-hmm.
that union, which is something, again, we used to do. You know, past generations before the Industrial Revolution, we had to marry for help on the farm and, you know, different things like that, that we've lost that. But yet we keep the same traditions as if, you know, we're basing our unions on survival and safety.
Right. Well, you know, and I think the three of us could continue to talk about this. And in fact, okay, Vicki, I'm going to make a proposal to you that you go to whoever the powers that be at Huffington Post and go, okay, we need a column with the three of us or something about this, because I think what you guys are doing with your book is so wonderful, and that's really what I'm trying to do with the show, is start a dialogue about this, because we, like Susan, you said this before, we want to put people into boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And we want black and white. We want easy. And,
yes.
you know, as I tell people, life is messy. You know,
yes.
if
right.
nothing, I mean, I tell people black, the only two things that I know that are black and white is you're pregnant or you're not, you're dead or you're not. Unless, of course, you believe in the Princess Bride where you could only be, like, mostly dead. You know, everything else is a shade of gray, but that's difficult for us. And so are you guys kind of running into some pushback already with the book, or is it not been out long enough?
It hasn't really been out long enough for the negative to come, but we are anticipating that.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be very upsetting for people. I mean, we've gotten a few comments here and there that we don't understand what love is. Yeah, we do. We don't understand what commitment is.
Probably
yeah,
better than they do, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't understand, you know, what traditional marriage is. We do, but we think they don't know because traditional marriage has changed so much,
mm-hmm.
flipped and flopped, and the way people have married throughout history, like, I think, what traditional marriage are you talking about? Unless you're just talking about marriage between a man and a woman, and that's not our conversation here because,
right.
obviously, that's already changing, and we had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's happening all by itself.
The outlets that have sought us out so far have been the progressive ones, not the conservative
mm-hmm.
ones. So I
right.
think it's early to know whether we're going to get a lot of blowback, but I definitely, we are anticipating it. And again, you know, we are not creating anything that isn't already out there. So it's not,
mm-hmm.
they might shoot us as messengers, but honestly, it's not going to change the trend that's already starting to happen.
Right. And I welcome the controversy because, you know, rather than, you know, wring your hands over the fact that people don't want to get married anymore, that the rates of this and that, and more children are being born to unmarried couples, rather than, you know, worry, let's find some creative way to reshape the institution
mm-hmm.
so that it actually is attractive for people and gives them what they need and want. And that means people need to think about why they want to get married when they don't have to, and realize that they can individualize their marriage for the purposes of the they want to have a successful. They can have a successful marriage by the way they define a successful marriage, not necessarily longevity, because longevity
right.
doesn't always mean success. There are many people who go the distance, but they're
and are miserable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, sexless. It's full of contempt and
right.
anger. And that's not a successful model at all.
No.
It's just not.
And it's not yet, yeah, and as you said before, it's not modeling a good thing for the children.
Right.
But so you know, and it's funny, and Susan and Vicki, thank you so much for joining me today. And I started out the program, you know, with a Frank Sinatra song. So
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna wrap this up, and I think the real takeaway that all of us want people to have is that, you know, another Frank Sinatra song, that they get to do marriage my way. we get to do that. So I again, thank you so much for being, and I know we could keep going, and so maybe I can have you back in a little bit of time when you guys have a little bit more feedback and we can talk some more about this, because I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think the book is great. I was one of the people who, you know, supported you early on financially, trying to when you were trying to do it a different way, and so I'm glad you guys
beautiful.
Got it published.
Aww, thank you, Leslie.
And so what I'd like everybody to take away is, you know, go read The New I Do and figure out, if you want to be married, what does that mean to you, and how do you want to do it? And so next week we're going to continue our conversation about how to be in a successful relationship, and I would love to hear your stories and your comments, so please feel free to send those to me. But until next week, from Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning, be loving.